Bush.
Here.
Robert Carlson.
Here.
Kristen Chu. Kevin Hughes.
Here.
Brian Larkin.
Here.
Brenda McNulty.
Here.
Alec Tonneson. Item 2, opportunity for the public to connect on any matters, to comment, pardon me, on any matters within the committee's jurisdiction that are not on the agenda.
Thank you. Good morning, GOBOC members. Congratulations on joining the Age of Aquarius and transparency. I testified October 3rd, 2016 that GOBOC should broadcast its meetings on SFGov TV. Today is your inaugural appearance on SFGov. So many thanks for joining the Age of Transparency in your oversight of $3.6 billion in general obligation bonds approved by voters. Recently, the Board of Trustees, Commissioners of the San Francisco Employees Retirement System discussed our public comment policies, and during that discussion, wrongly asserted that city employees and retirees only come to the retirement board meetings for an opportunity to get on SFGov TV, which of course is complete nonsense. Beneficiaries of the retirement system don't give a rat's patootie about getting on TV, but we do care about oversight of our pension trust fund. We also care about oversight on that $3.6 billion in bond funds. GOBOC will ultimately find that members of the public who attend your meetings come here to voice concern over bond fund expenditures, not opportunities to get on TV. So many thanks that you are finally taking this important step forward. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Seeing none.
Item 3, election of chair and vice chair.
And we're going to defer that item because we had an email message from Alex Tolleson that he will be late coming to the meeting and asked if we could wait until he arrived to have that election. And we checked in with the city attorney, among others, the representative of the city attorney, pardon me, among others, and found that we could, in fact, delay that. And so we shall.
Item 4, approval with possible modification of the minutes of the May 25th, 2017, and June 14, 2017 meetings. And I'd like to note that on the May 25th agenda, meeting minutes, there is a correction of a date under the whistleblower presentation. And Kristen Chu is now at present.
Mr. Chair, I would like to call your attention to page 3 of the draft minutes. In line 2, the reference to end fiscal year 2017 to 2018, that should be deleted because the team only presented initiatives for fiscal year 2016 to 2017.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Any other changes or suggestions? Robert?
I just had one question as I read through the June 14th minutes on page 2 under open item number 3. That last paragraph, a committee member asks for the addition of another item, a customer service evaluation that would look at annual reports from the departments, the diversity of appointments to various committees, so on and so forth. I couldn't remember what that was. I apologize for that. And it says the controller was going to scope out and possibly report at today's meeting. So if that's going to happen, then I can wait till that. But I wasn't real sure what that item was about. Can somebody refresh my memory?
Oh. Mr. Bush, I think you may have made that request or comment.
I'm sorry. I recollect. I drifted. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, there was on the minutes of June 14th, under open item number three, there was a paragraph, and I can read the paragraph again. A committee member asks for the addition of another item, a customer service evaluation that would look at annual reports from the departments, the diversity of appointments to various committees, commissions, et cetera, and whether departments agreed with recommendations or made other recommendations. The controller agreed to scope out some of the proposed projects along with next steps and bring back to the July 2017 committee meeting. And I couldn't remember what the relevancy of this item was to the work of this committee. And
it had to do with Proposition F, which had to do with transparency and customer service. And so what I looked at is in the CSA work plan we're going to do, it looks like one of the items might be inclusive enough.
Okay, then let's defer this to that discussion. Right. I'm fine with this.
All right. Any public comment on the meeting minutes? Seeing none, motion to approve as amended.
So I would make that motion, Mr. Chair.
And I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Unopposed? I asked for it.
Oh. Okay.
And there was none, surprisingly. All right.
Thank you. The minutes are approved.
All right.
Item number five, presentation from the City Services Auditor regarding the CSA work plan and possible action by the committee in response to such presentation.
You know, before we start, I also wanted to acknowledge on behalf of the committee that this is our first televised meeting of the Citizens General Obligation Bond Oversight Committee. On behalf of all the members here, I'm glad that it is now being televised, and I'd like to extend a welcome to that premier audience, both of them. Okay. And here we are, Peg Stevenson.
Good morning, committee members. I'm Peg Stevenson. I'm the director of the performance section of the Controller City Services Auditor. This is Tanya Ledigeux, who's the director of the audit section. At your last meeting, we had a sort of overview of our upcoming work plan for the fiscal year that's just started this month. And so now we are back to you for a little bit more detailed discussion of what we've got planned for the coming fiscal year. And we've met with liaisons in between and also tried to incorporate a couple of the suggestions that were made during your own discussion of your work plan. So we'll try and answer each of the questions that was raised at the last item in addition to just kind of updating you on where we got to with our work plan. And then after this meeting is concluded, we'll publish the final version on our website, and that'll be kind of the last step in our work planning for the fiscal year. The slide deck, some of these you've seen before, so I'll just speak to them very quickly. We have a summary of Charter Appendix F and its mandates to the Controller's Office. The broad language about reporting on the city's level and effectiveness of public services, transparency to the public, our role as the city's internal auditor, and then several specific requirements that were particular issues in Charter Appendix F at the time, street, parks, and sidewalk standards, and the like, the whistleblower hotline. The next slide is a summary of our resources. Again, just to give everybody a sense of scale, the requirement is for 0.2% of the city's budget by fund. By fund means that we get a specific work order from each of the city's departments that are enterprise in nature. PUC, for example, they collect their funding by virtue of fees to all the users. We get 0.2% by the fund that's captured by their user fees. And so when you look at our budget, there's a column for all the departments that we're getting a work order from and a general fund transaction as well. And that has some effect on how we allocate our time and resources. The annual operating budget that's coming to us that way in the current fiscal year, $17.4 million. And then the capital budget, the same transaction is done for capital funds. Current estimate is $1.2 million, but this varies quite a bit, as I'm sure you'd be aware, depending on what issuances happen during the fiscal year. We plan our audit program only partly to do with the cash flow of how money comes from the bond funds and otherwise to do with other mandates that we've discussed here many times, what should be addressed in pre-planning, what should be done during an audit program, and what should be done as closeout. Our resources, 65 FTE. My staff are 30 at when we be fully staffed, and Tanya's 35, I believe. And then the next slide to go into a little bit more detail about our largest departments. Our budget looks like the city budget, and that's one of the main drivers of how we allocate our resources. This table just takes the largest work orders by size in descending order, so you can see who we're doing most of our work for. General Fund is always the largest. Department of Public Health, MTA, Human Services, Airport, PUC, Public Works. Those have been stable for many years. Last year, with the creation of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, we're now getting a separate work order for that activity from the new department. And here I'm going to turn it over to Tanya.
As Peg stated, there's two sides of the house, city audits and city performance. And the city audit side of the house basically serves as the internal auditor for the city. And we conduct performance audits evaluating efficiency, effectiveness, and economy of city operations, management, construction, IT, and activities in accordance with generally accepted government auditing standards, which are promulgated by the U.S. Government Accountability Office. The city audits is also involved in conducting various financial and mandated audits, not only those required by Appendix F of the city charter for CSA, but also various mandates and requirements from the city administrator's code, which include cash disbursement, city leases and lease management, audits of treasurer and tax collector records, as well as prohibition of use of public funds by city contractors, disadvantaged business enterprise, and controller's audit of operations of all boards, commissions, departments to evaluate effectiveness and efficiency, as well as business and tax regulations. And as it relates to our city performance side, they're involved in the various technical aspects of providing assistance, analysis, tracking performance measures, evaluating standards, and benchmarking city services and functions against organizations or jurisdictions. So our processes for developing our work plan each year is a very thoughtful one that involves collaboration with all of our stakeholders throughout the departments, as well as talking with our boards, as well as the mayor's office. And in developing our plan, we consider the various charter, our admin code requirements and mandates, as well as any other legislation that we need to consider. We look at this and we develop a limited risk analysis to ensure we've covered topics of concern as well as interest, as well as any emerging challenges coming forth. And our input and suggestions are from, as I stated, elected officials, our department heads, and all of our other stakeholders, and as well as we look at our bond and capital program activities. So we take all that information and in doing so and determine what we should be doing. And based on, as you know, we have limited resources like all departments. We have 65 staff, and we take that work and we determine how we're going to get that work done with our 65 staff, as well as working with some of our different contractors. So one of the things that, as we talk about emerging risk, I'd like to speak to the fact that our shop has really evolved. We have audits, information technology, and cyber team, and that really is to address the emerging risks that we're all familiar about. We hear daily about hacking and just security risks, so we are doing something in that area, but we are not necessarily publishing those documents simply because, as our Yellow Book standards require us to ensure that when we are publishing documents, they will not harm the city in any way, our operations and our businesses. We continue to do work around the construction bond audits and capital-related assistance, as well as nonprofit monitoring and auditing, and Peg Shop is doing performance measures program. And one of the new things that we're doing, we're supporting the police department as it relates to all of the recommendations from the Department of Justice.
Again, just to sort of remind you of the landscape of the city performance unit, we are the primary reporting entity for city's performance measures. We have a couple of major products in that vein. We publish an annual performance measures report, which is more than 1,000 measures gathered from all departments. Mr. Bush was just asking where it shows on the website. The answer is there's an appendix to our annual report published, and also the full data set is on DataSF. And we do an extensive year-long process where we work with the departments to check the currency of their measures, validate them, be sure that they're supported by underlying data, update them, add and drop measures depending on what they're doing, so that the city's core base of performance measures stays current and valid and supported. The performance scorecards, which is one of the probably the major performance reporting entity that we started publishing last year, is a compilation of, I think, 89 measures, which are grouped into 8 different service areas that are intended to be speaking to public interest here: livability, transportation, public safety. It's intended to be viewed as a web document. I hope you've all had a chance to look at it since it first came out in the current last fiscal year. There's a cover page which lists the measures for that department with a red, yellow, green indicator of the status of it. And then when you drill down on each performance indicator, there's a detail page which is a graph with toggles that allow you to change time periods. Sometimes there's a selection for typology depending on what the measure is, and a detailed text explanation of what's going on there. And that's intended to be our major performance reporting, user-friendly, public access tool. It replaces a quarterly document that we published for many years, which you may remember, which was a static PDF document. This is much more interactive, has a lot of movement. And again, we work to keep it current. Mayor's office is a major contributor to this and interested in it. And most of the measures are chosen in consultation both with them and with the people who own that service area in the department. Benchmarking research and reports, we've had a couple different approaches to it. The one that we published in fiscal year 15-16 was a summary benchmarking report that went across all the city's service areas instead of doing sort of service area by service area, which we had been doing for a couple years before. Again, I hope you had a chance to look at it. We're really proud of the document. A lot of it is things that can be researched from public sources so that we don't have to do new surveying every single time we want to update it. That was part of our goal here, was not to start something that was going to be really, really, really time-consuming to maintain. So we're hoping to mostly maintain it in the format that we published it last year. However, of course, we will add and change measures depending on the currency of public services. Parks inspections, analysis, and reporting. Again, you've heard me say this, but we went mobile with this last year, and that means that a whole lot of time and effort that was being devoted to taking paper checkoff forms and putting them into the database for analysis is now gone. And so we have mobile inspections and a lot of documentation to go with it that has made the whole process of using our park evaluations usable for park maintenance and planning and work orders in a way that just wasn't in past fiscal years. It's an amazing change, and we're hoping to bring that same change. I hope I can make this come true during the fiscal year, but that same change to the Department of Public Works street standards work, which is still done mostly by paper right now. Citywide nonprofit monitoring and accountability. This is a program where we're working with now 9 city departments, and I think we're adding a couple in the current fiscal year who share nonprofit contractors, where we do our financial and compliance monitoring with them once, instead of having multiple visits from the different city departments that are using that contractor. We publish a report saying their compliance to the city's standards, and those that are having trouble meeting the city's standards, we have a technical assistance program outreach to them to help them get their reporting and their financial management in order so that they can meet the city's standards in future years. And last but not least, I'll just mention it's a major growth area for us last year, and in the next fiscal year is a lean program for city government. This is where we have trained a lot of people, including my own staff, and more than 150 people now in other city departments to do basic business process mapping, identify waste, and design improvements that are not dependent on new technology systems or more money, are things that you can do just by making changes in your own processes. I'd be happy to talk about this at great length if we have time for it, but it's really exciting and I think transformative change that we've worked on in the past couple of fiscal years where, you know, in many, many functions where we would never get there with a technical assistance project and they may not have had the resources to do it themselves. This makes it possible for a lot more city departments to really use modern business process mapping and design, and it's really exciting. And back to Tanya.
So as it relates to our audits, we can, plan to continue with several of our citywide audit programs, which are generally designed to audit key business processes or functions to ensure and determine overall compliance, effectiveness, and efficiency. And given the emergence of new risks faced by local government, we're tending to move away from conducting comprehensive management audits of departments requiring thousands of hours to conduct more focused, quick touches, so we're able to provide timely recommendations on a variety of risks by moving away from that type of auditing in some cases. And when where we find that it is needed to do a much more deep dive, we do so based on how we choose our samples and the results of those samples. And this happens to be a trend in auditing with our peer local government audit shops, as well as in the federal and the state audit organization. So we are in alignment with our peers at these different levels. And as a result of that, we are, with our continuous audit programs, we continually design key reviews of city functions as it relates to cash, disbursements, payroll, inventory. So I like to consider it looking at the financial statements and looking at what's on the balance sheet, looking at those types of items, assets as well. And I mentioned earlier, we are doing information technology, cybersecurity audit audits now. And we are currently working on our annual report, which will have 3 years of the work that we have done, where we will report out on a high level where what the condition of the city is as it relates to security. But it will be definitely an extremely high-level report in alignment to standards as well. We have added client eligibility audits to our list in the last couple of years, where we looked at different programs where we are providing some type of level of assistance to an individual or recipient just to ensure that they are meeting the eligibility requirements as outlined by the provisions of receiving that service. We are looking at our nonprofit organizations, and we're going to do a little bit more work in the next coming years in that particular area as well, and we mentioned that last time. And while we're adding these different things and we continue to do them, we are mandated to look at certain admin codes, as I mentioned earlier, and we'll continue to do that judiciously. And one, I think one of the greatest pieces of our work is not just the audit work that we're doing and putting out the audit findings, but what's more valuable about those audit findings are the recommendations and the follow-up that we do around those recommendations. And we have found that over a two-year period, 97% of those audit recommendations are implemented by our departments, and that signifies that they are very responsive to the work that we're doing and they take it serious, and they are doing a great work in that. Generally, that 3% or 4% that's left over, it requires a bargaining unit opening
time period during one of our annual negotiations, or it's a huge system implementation. It requires a large amount of resource that the department has to figure out how they're going to fund, how they're going to get all these things done. So as it relates to some of our performance audits, we're going to be doing a capital construction division audit at SFMTA. We're doing a citywide fleet management audit. We're doing an audit at DPH for environmental health this year. And those audits generally take anywhere from 15 to 2,500 hours of resource time to get that work done. So that's where we're doing that deep, deep dive. And it's not necessarily over the whole entire organization because it really takes a lot of time to do an entire organization. So we're looking at a portion of our organization, or from a citywide perspective, we're looking at potentially an area where there's some concern or risk, and we'd like to address it from a citywide perspective. And generally, there's at least six departments or more using that particular service that we're looking at. And we continue to work on the GO Bond expenditure audits, as we've talked about here last time that we met with you, and we'll be doing four as requested by this group. And then we have a pre-construction phase audit that we're working on as well.
So as Tanya's just done looping back to specific focuses that we have in the fiscal year that's just begun, the full work plan, as I'm sure you are aware, is a couple of hundred lines of audits and work projects. I'll just mention a couple of highlights to you, and we've had a chance to meet with your liaisons and talk to them in more detail. Again, be happy to answer any questions that you have. We published a more complete list of the largest audits and projects in the back of the work plan when the document is published. So there's a lot of detail there. Just a couple highlights to give you a sense of our content for the current year. So at the Department of Public Health, very dynamic department, as you can imagine. They, you know, so many changes have happened over the current year. You know, we past couple of years, we had our own Healthy San Francisco program for uninsured adults, and that was worked on for a couple of years when the Affordable Care Act came into place. The city had to transition its public health department into a managed care environment, and Medicaid expansion affected our populations a lot. We are still dealing with all the changes in enrollments and the record keeping and the clinic services and everything else that have been indicated by those. There's a significant financial reserve set aside on the city's part, as you may know from listening to the budget hearings, for what might happen here if Medicaid expansion is seriously affected and we get a lot of patients coming back into the public health system who weren't there in the last couple of years. We're helping manage a very big set of expert consultant contracts that are available to the public health department to do planning and service design in these areas. So I'll just kind of leave it at that. And I know that Ms. Chu has a specific interest in this since she has background in it. Again, we're happy to provide more detail on any one of the projects, but let's just give you a sense of the landscape. And the Department of Public Health is acquiring a new electronic health record system, which is going to be, we think, the largest single IT purchase in the city's history. And they're really just in the planning design stages now, so we're helping them with that and hopefully applying some of the lessons that the controller's office learned from the financial system planning and design to what they're doing at health. At the MTA, we have a couple of very significant projects in customer service, which I know speaks to a concern that's come up here. We've done analysis of how they take in and categorize and investigate and respond to customer service complaints. And we're just now working with all of the people, the staff that do that at the MTA, to redesign their processes and address the many weaknesses that came up, including response back to the customer. How do you find out what was done? Do you find out what was done? can they follow through on more complaints by getting appropriate information and not have to close them for lack of information? There's a ton of great improvements that can be made in this area with pretty straightforward design changes, so we're really happy to have the chance to be working with the MTA on that. In capital program delivery, I mentioned this at the last meeting, but it goes to your interests. They have asked specifically for a review of a couple of projects and the public outreach work that was done on them. They feel themselves in the position, as I know you have experienced with some of the reports here, of feeling like a lot of time and effort was put into public and stakeholder outreach. At the same time, the public doesn't feel there was enough, and the whole process slowed everything down. All three things can feel true, I think, is all of our experience, and so we're trying to design a research and survey process with them to get data behind these, which ones are really true, how can we improve the design, and I'm excited about the project. I'm glad they asked for it. I hope it'll speak to some of your concerns as well. We continue to do work to support the city's capital planning. We'll be working with the departments that are slated to come into the new permit center that's being built at Mission and One South Van Ness, below One South Van Ness. That's a long design process that we hope, again, will produce at the end of all of it a customer-friendly organization that doesn't just take, you know, what the permitting departments have now and move it into a new building, but really design it in a way that makes it feel like you don't have to know everything already about getting a permit before you walk in the door, I guess is our simplest goal. We'll be making new improvements to the performance program. I touched on a couple of these, expanding the data academy where we do our statistical and software training and also the lean training. And then the assistance of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Again, in the current year, our major project was just helping them get up and running and get their contracts transferred as a technical matter. And then we also did a project to analyze the work that's done by the homeless outreach team and design a new kind of working model with and for them. We have about four projects that are planned for that were the request of Jeff Kaczynski and also responsive to some of the public concerns and mayor's concerns about how that department is working. So we'll be doing a number of different things. Again, assisting with their contracting, implementing the new design issues for the homeless outreach process, looking at how they manage their buildings, and just the whole, they became a very big manager of real estate leases and how they're going to deal with that whole issue. And then a couple of service design, sort of architectural evaluations where, you know, the goal, if I can oversimplify it for the department, is to not have homelessness addressed by, you know, which case manager or program you talked to that day or which door you came into, but by acuity. They're trying to make sure that they understand and enroll the city's homeless population in a coherent and consistent way and deal with the different populations in terms of acuity and meeting their service needs best. And again, just not have it be dependent on which door you walked through that day. That's the department's goal in the simplest terms, and we'll be helping them with the evaluation for that. Just two other quick things to mention since they came up in the liaison meetings. We will do work that you had requested when you talked about your own work plan about public satisfaction with bond program. We think it's a good idea, and it seemed to get a lot of agreement among your group when you talked about your work plan. We are refreshing the pool of contractors that we use to do survey work. And so we use them for the city survey. Other city departments use them for surveying design. So as soon as that pool of contractors is available to us again, we can put together a design document and have this work bid, you know, by the market and employ a contractor. Choosing a project, I was not at the liaison meeting that was had in the last couple of weeks, so I don't know if we have moved closer to choosing a project. But as soon as that decision can be made in consultation with you, we'll have a much better sense of how it's going to be funded and what the size and design is. But again, we're excited about doing this. We think it's a good project. We're preparing to have ours and funding line items put in the next the start of the next quarters as we get the work done. Also on customer service plans, I think one of the and this speaks to where Mr. Carlson mentioned the note in the minutes. We did a survey of kind of everything that the departments currently do by way of a lot of different charter requirements that touch on these areas as a support to the mayor's request on strategic planning. So they want every city department to have a strategic plan and to publish it. Consistency in format, user-friendliness, and design would be great, but that may be further down the road. So we're working with the mayor's office to help make that come true, provide resources for it. One of the things that we did was, you know, survey all the departments to see what they had. You know, did they have a strategic plan? Did it have, you know, goals, targets, measures? Which elements were present? Which were missing? You know, had there been a public discussion process? Had there been a stakeholder process? All the things that you need in a strategic plan. Whether or not they have a customer service plan, I think we included in that survey. I have to check and make sure we got current information on it, but at minimum we would have a data point that says, yes, they do or don't publish a customer service plan that would go partly to Mr. Bush's interest, who I think was the person who raised that in discussion. And that brings us to, similar to the conversation that you had at your last meeting about how you're meeting your charter requirements, we want to talk a little bit about how we're meeting our charter requirements. Again, just to kind of bring us all up to speed on this. So we put a couple of slides in here in a table which just lists the major requirements in Charter Appendix F, which are our marching orders. The section references column one. Column two is what I call standard work, you know, things that we're doing every year that are responsive to this requirement. And then column three are things that we're doing in the current year, which are more specifically responsive to the requirement and examples of how we're doing that work. So Tanya and I are going to kind of take turns just running down these requirements very quickly. First one, Charter Appendix F101, Services Audit Unit. This is the section, I always call it aspirational when I talk to you. It talks about reporting on the level and effectiveness of public services, about reporting to the public, being transparent. And here we, our standard work is the performance measurement database, the scorecards, and a lot of technical assistance work that we do. There's language in there about reporting on workload requirements. We do a lot of work that addresses workload. The example that I've given here for 1718, HSA benefits intake project. So this is something we're doing with HSA where they have a lot of eligibility workers that do intake for food stamps, Medicaid, and the way they organize their work needed evaluation and redesign. They had a couple of queuing processes which are very outdated, which meant that some workers were busy all the time and stuff was piling up and they were getting backloads. Others reached the end of a task list and then had nothing to do for the rest of their workday. So we are doing work which is basically about evening out and bringing some more modern design methods to that workload. So I just raise it as an example of something that we're doing that measures and acts on workload. There's language in there about effectiveness. I talked about the MTA passenger service request project. That's an example of a measure of an effectiveness. Tanya, on performance audits.
So as it relates to performance audits, as I shared earlier, we have the fleet management audit, which is for the entire city, and then Department of Public Health or Environmental Health, and then our IT governance audits. And so as it relates to performance, and we survey and we're looking at other jurisdictions as it relates to leading practices, and we're looking at, the reality is with all of our audits that are just simply not compliance audits, we are looking at economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. And we really look to determine how those three E's, as we call it in our world, are being satisfied within the context of our work.
The next section is about street and park standards. We touched on this. Our standard work is the annual report. Our current work in fiscal year 17-18 is improvements to the mobile tools and a new dashboard that we're creating for the Rec and Park Department to use that data. In Public Works, the contract is coming to an end, so we're going to bid a new contract, and I hope move to mobile, as I mentioned. And Tanya on the
Really quickly, we have the go-beyond expenditure audits, which really are to determine, are we in compliance with the language of the bond? And it's really, are we spending the money accordingly? And as you know, we already have those in work, and we're continuing to do that work as discussed prior.
I got tired of this tag team thing. To work on our act. The next section is management and employment practices. The language, I think, says that the city services auditor should have work that looks at the city's management and employment practices and which promote or impede effective public service delivery. It mentions specifically reporting on overtime and workers' comp and the top five departments' expenditures and issues in there, which we our budget analysis unit is the major unit that does the work on that and publishes that report. Our focus work in 17-18 is going to be a metric and dashboard development. This is where we had done a time-to-hire analysis that drew on job apps and many, many other data sources. But the fact of the matter is the city doesn't have a reliable way of looking end-to-end at how long it takes to hire somebody and where the pinch points are. So we are working with the Human Resources Department to change and fix that. And one of the opportunities that's coming up here is the job apps, the way that city intakes all of its applications and processes them is coming to an end, and the city has the opportunity to design new system requirements and to improve the current system to be able to report that more reliably.
And as it relates to this particular piece of our charter, we're actually doing a performance audit of SFMTA's workers' compensation program. We're looking at the cost effectiveness of that program and how it's preventing or minimizing workers' compensation claims. We are also looking at their third-party administrator and how effectively and efficiently they are protecting SFMTA's interest as it relates to the various claims that come forth, and then is InterCare complying with its contract and terms? And there's, of course, other objectives that fall out into that work as well. Okay. And so as it relates to F1-104, we are, again, primarily focusing on the performance audits we are conducting and our periodic, our comprehensive financial and performance audits of city departments. And so we're looking at our assessments, the compliance audits, just really all of our work at large. And so we have, again, the Capital and Construction Division audit at SFMTA, the Citywide Fleet Management audit, then all of the mandated compliance and concession audits at the airport, the port, Rec and Park, SFMTA, and SFPUC, then the construction audits, and then, as I spoke earlier, our quick touch audits, cash, inventory, so forth and on. So then, as it relates to this area, we are publicly issuing our audit work. We have our follow-up process. That's every 6 months. We follow up, theoretically, all the way to up to 2 years. Generally, as I stated earlier, it's a 97% rate of recommendations implemented. And for those that are outstanding, we do continue to follow up on those audits. But generally, our hope is that everything is actually implemented within the two-year period. And we come before the board's government audit and oversight committee with those audit results and recommendations.
Charter section F.106 is oversight of contracting procedures. So this is language that speaks to the controller's authority to oversee city contracting procedures and provide advice and standards about model RFPs and other contract processes. Again, we've had a project in our work plan every single year that I've been here, doing work with and for the city's OCA trainings, new contract documents. We have a website which is also available to the public. It's not an intranet site, that has a full set of documents on this subject: model RFPs, standard language, charts, timelines for how to run RFP processes, documents and decks on how to train your staff to make sure that you do these processes effectively and compliantly. It's really complicated, as you know. There's many city departments that just don't have the ability to run a contracting process themselves because they are small staffed and they have a couple of administrative staff who do everything. In some cases, we have run contracting processes for them because we have staff that are well-versed in these compliant efforts, and we can get a contract and meet all the compliance requirements. So we do some of both. We have a lot of training and tools available for other departments, and in some cases, we have done contracting processes ourselves for client departments. The sort of main act in fiscal year 17-18 will have to do with the functionality that's becoming available in the city's new financial system. So a whole lot of functionality which was present in three or four different systems used by the Office of Contract Administration and all the client departments is moving into FSP. There will be better tracking of every step of the process, I think I can say with confidence. More ability to do analysis since contracting steps will be captured in there electronically for the most part, and instead of hard paper copy documents submitted to most RFP processes. There's going to be a long period at which we're finding issues out, the first couple of quarters at minimum. And Ben may be able to speak more to this because I was actually not here the last couple of weeks when the go-live first happened, but I'm sure we're already collecting a list of changes to functionality that we all want to make the contracting tools the holy grail that we're all hoping for from this project come true. And so I don't have a project definition for you right now, but after a couple of quarters of looking at what worked and what didn't, then we'll be designing a project for improvement there, and I'm happy to come back and talk to you about what happens next.
So as it relates to F1.107, you're all familiar that we do have a robust whistleblower program, and we have quarterly reports summarizing the results of substantiated complaints and highlighting our operations. We host liaison education and training sessions to publicize the program citywide. We have a fraud hotline, as well as webinars, and I think the program just continues to grow and move well.
So just the last section that is listed here was the requirement about customer service plans. Again, I mentioned to you that I think we included this in our survey. We'll include it in the strategic plan work that we're doing with the mayor's office and then have a better sense of sort of where the city stands on the customer service plan requirement. So I'll just, sort of take a step back here, and this is a good exercise for us, the looking at the Charter Appendix F requirements. You know, same like it was a good exercise for you all to go through in your last couple of meetings. There are a lot of them. We strive to have work that is responsive to every requirement. We know that we have good performance in many areas and weaknesses in some. We really value the input that we get, from you and from civil grand jury reports and from the public and the mayor's office that help us strengthen, improve, and add things to our work plan that, make it complete and responsive to everything that's wanted in Charter Appendix F. And it's, the progress that's happened over the last couple of fiscal years, I think, is really impressive. I mean, Tanya's, steady efforts since she was hired to put in consistent audit programs in all the areas that she's listed in her slides, the improvements that we've been able to make in our performance program, once we sort of stabilized the leadership of it in Natasha Mihal and added staff to that element, just our client departments getting better and better at working with us to, where there's a value to having a third party, which we are in many senses, come in and help them with something, either because we bring skills or the neutrality is valued, has meant that the quality of our projects has gotten a lot better, and using the right tool for the job is always on my mind here. So I'm really proud of where we are, but at the same time, I'm happy to hear any requests, comments. I hope we've successfully incorporated at least what we did hear from the liaisons in your last couple of meetings into our work plan. We do a formal update every quarter. So as we're meeting with you during the year, you know, at the beginning, upcoming, you know, first of the month that starts every fiscal quarter, we make formal changes to the work plan. We add audits and projects and drop audits and projects if they a different decision has been made during that time period. So there's a formal opportunity, you know, three times during the next fiscal year. And, of course, discussion we can have at any of your meetings.
Okay. Well, I think we have a liaison report, so we should do that before we start asking questions. So, Kristen?
Yeah. I apologize to my colleagues. I didn't let you know about this meeting. It happened pretty quickly, and so I think one of the things that we were trying to do is just put it out there and say, hey, this is happening. You can join as long as we don't have five. But I did reach out to Larry, who also attended a one-hour meeting that we had, I think it was last week or so. And it was a great meeting. I learned a lot through the process and the breadth of what this team is doing is very impressive, and the fact that they can understand, you know, the challenges across very different domain areas and have an effect on the ability for those domain areas for each of those departments to deliver, I think is a very rare and difficult thing to do. I can see a trend in what's happening there. I think Peg was sort of getting at this, but trying to turn the culture of this city to include performance improvement in how they do their work every day. I know that at UCSF we also have adopted Lean, and it really has changed the way we talk about the work that we do. It's put some terms in that made it very accessible for everyone to say, well, how can we do better? And I think that one of the ways you can see that this group has been successful is that departments are reaching out to them saying, hey, can you help me do this? I think we saw that last quarter when one of the departments was really inviting you in. And usually you don't invite auditors in. You wait until the very last minute. That seems to be, that's definitely a sign that the culture is changing or that you're having that effect that you're certainly looking to have. That's my whole report. Larry, did you want to add anything?
I thought there was an opportunity for a few points to emerge from your conversation that would help the public understand some of the issues. When you talk about MTA and customer service, what have you found about the backup in traffic affecting the ability for MTA to meet its timelines? Because in the newspapers, I read that that it's having a significant impact on ability to get around the city. Are you finding that customer complaints are in any way related to the level of traffic in the city, as opposed to, say, operator deficiencies or something like that?
I'm sure we can know that. I really don't want to talk off the top of my head or guess about it, which is what I would be doing. But the complaints can be categorized in ways that support that. So we know which one of them are about pass-ups, rudeness or other driver behavior issues, lateness or timeliness of the buses. So there are data points that allow us to know those things. I won't guess, but as we move through the project, we can certainly report to you on it. And we're reporting to the MTA's policy advisory group about it this week.
I guess what I would then go is, after you know A, is there a B step that you would then make some recommendations to someone about how to move the traffic faster so that the public transit would work better?
I don't think that's really an element of this project, but of other projects.
You have a study on eligibility, and I'm wondering to what extent is that a cross-cutting study? So you take in, I know in the past our systems didn't do a good job of talking to each other, so you couldn't say who's receiving public assistance versus who's getting food stamps or who's getting health stuff, that we just couldn't match these things up. Do they match up now better?
So as it relates to, we're not looking at the design of the system.
Right.
We're looking at the compliance piece of it. And so is this person actually eligible to receive this particular benefit? And it's not so it's not about their system. It's not an audit of systems.
So does that mean that you can't at this time, the system doesn't let you look at an individual and say, this person would qualify for housing assistance, for food stamps, for health service, and also so you could see across the board what the programs are that they would be eligible for?
So to answer your question, we have not designed an audit in that area at this point in time, but we're not opposed to doing so.
On contracting, F1.106, Ben was good enough to give me information on some of the debarments. Do you circulate the list of debarments to departments that do the contracting?
I can take this one, and I owe you a deeper follow-up, Mr. Bush, on some of your questions, which I'll get done this week. Vendors that are debarred by the city go through a formal process that's outlined in the administrative code. Once a vendor is debarred, the debarment is posted to the city's website, and the system which we use to both encumber funds and make payments to vendors is coded such that no contract can be entered into with a debarred vendor or a payment process to a debarred vendor.
Do you share that with federal debarment programs so that when you have, for example, DPW is getting federal funds and you can make sure that you have a federally debarred person who's not getting a city contract?
It's a good question that I don't know the answer to, but I can follow up and get back to you on it. How information is shared back and forth between the city and county and other governments regarding our debarments. Let me follow up on that.
And the last question I had was on F1.108 on customer service plan. Is that going to become part of a departmental annual reports? A customer service plan be included in a department annual reports, which are mandated by the charter?
How we're trying to get to that is with this support to the mayor's initiative on strategic planning. We'll include customer service plans, whether they have one or not, in our summation of that. Departments doing annual reports, also a checkbox on our survey of departments. Whether they have the one in the other, I don't know, but I just thinking out loud here, I guess, you know, one of the things we're producing for the mayor's office is a sort of simplified design tool. You know, you need a strategic plan. Here are the basic elements it should have. Right. If you don't have a model for it, here's a model. Support to them to run processes, to move through the steps of a strategic plan in some cases. So that's the work that we've got in mind. It's one of those things where, you know, we could spend hundreds and hundreds of hours on this if we did everything that was asked for. We need to make a decision about how many hours we want to commit to it and, you know, work strategically. So
I want to also extend a compliment to you all for overall for all the work you do. Notably, on the mayor's webpage, it now includes the performance scorecards. So I'm pleased to see that it allows it to get wider distribution to the public. That's a good thing.
I had one other comment. Peg, there was two things that we asked for. You had mentioned the bond satisfaction surveys, but the other one that I think we talked about, Tanya, was compare this body with other bodies that do bond oversight and both within the city and then also.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So we definitely will be doing that work as requested.
Right. I thought we had.
That's for year-over-year stuff, too.
Okay. We're way over time on this item, but I'm going to ask a couple of questions real quickly. One of the things that I think, Peg, you mentioned was that in doing public outreach, you find that the agency itself will complain that we're spending an awful lot of time doing this and it delays their progress. And then from the public, you say, oh, there hasn't been enough public outreach. Is the city looking to coming up with a standard form by which, you know, they'll do this, a standard process, I should say, you know, with limited objectives commensurate with the schedule of the project?
Again, I'd only be guessing. There are standard requirements now when you're doing an EIR. So the basic architecture is probably still going to be driven by that.
Okay.
And then in the MTA's case, they have other public outreach requirements that are driven by their funding sources, if there's federal money involved. So I think one of their goals certainly is standard work and approach to this. So I know it's not a lot of information now, but I think that is certainly one of their goals.
And one other question, more of a comment. I think this is for Tanya. You are doing a performance audit, and this is under F-104, SFMTA, Capital and Construction Division audit. With Brenda, the liaison for the 2014 Transportation and Road Improvement Bond, and I like to coordinate somehow with that, with your effort, as long as that isn't a violation of sunshine or whatever, yeah.
Certainly.
Okay, so I will just contact you by email, and we'll see what we can do. I don't expect this to be a major effort, but I would like to at least not be redundant in what you're doing and be aware of what you're doing, too.
Most certainly.
Okay, great. Now, that's all I had. Any other questions from members of the committee? None. All right, then, public comment. Thanks, both of you.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Drattler. I have three comments. The statement made today by the CSA of, quote, helping manage, close quote, with regard to Department of Public Health concerns me because one of the basic rules of auditing is auditor independence, and as an auditor, you can't audit your own work. Management consulting within an audit function is not permitted and should not be housed within the CSA. This was a major issue with regard to the big four accounting firms, which led them to spin out their consulting businesses into independent business units. Number two, the lack of public disclosure of the information technology and cyber team reports is extreme. Can the title of the reports be listed on the controller website, and the reason why the reports are not published be provided? This would provide citizen awareness of the existence of these reports and opens the potential for a citizen to sunshine specific reports that are not currently visible and the potential for sensitive portions of technology audit reports to be redacted versus hiding all the reports. Number three, has the CSA ever performed a departmental comprehensive financial and performance audit of the Department of Building Inspections? There is an epidemic of unpermitted construction in San Francisco, and citizens are looking for DBI accountability. There is no reason that the building code compliance can't be as effective as the city's enforcement of the parking code with assistance from the CSA. Thank you.
Good morning again. I'm Patrick Manetsaw. Maura Lane kindly forwarded you my email announcing my new article in the Westside Observer titled Failure to Monitor Change Orders. It's available on my website, www.stoplhhdownsize.com. It's all one word. My article noted the 2008 and 2012 neighborhood parks bonds that you oversee averaged 10.8% in change orders against initial project budgets, with for 17 projects that have been completed to date, there are still 10 outstanding. Applying that 10.8% to the $3.6 billion in bond projects you oversee would translate into $388.8 million in change orders that would go up in smoke. This isn't just about a $20 toilet seat change order that some of you may not care so much about. $388 million is a lot of money. Gobach failed to investigate the $71.6 million in change orders on the Laguna Honda Hospital rebuild, resulting in scope of 420 skilled nursing beds that has now resulted in dumping patients out of county. Gobach hasn't investigated excessive costs, soft costs, like the 18% or $159.4 million in the SFGH rebuild soft costs. You've also failed to investigate reduction in scope on other bond-funded projects. During your May 25th meeting, Controller Rosenfield noted that a standardized reporting template for quarterly reporting was being developed for all bond projects based on the ESCR and RRSS bond report formats currently in use, which include reporting of change orders. But that's problematic because the RRSS bond presentation shoehorned reporting nine different categories of change orders into just four categories. And many of the bonds passed by voters address multiple projects within a single bond, but the RRS bond failed to report in change orders for two of those projects. On June 23rd, Peg Stevenson replied to a records request saying no bond template is being worked on or proposed as yet, but suggested the 2012 Parks bond has, quote, the most common consistently used format, end quote, but it doesn't report change orders. Which is it? Rosenfield's a template is being developed, or Stevenson's no new template has been proposed? They can't have it both ways. Completing a bond reporting template, including change orders, should be your highest priority.
We are so admonished. Okay. All right. All right, we're done with that.
Presentation from the civil grand jury regarding accelerating San Francisco government and possible action by the committee in response to such presentation.
Yes, I have. Have you? You can subpoena people.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. My name is Lawrence Grew. I'm the chair of the Government Performance Committee of the Civil Grand Jury for 2016-2017. I'm here today with my colleague, Kathy Lowry, the foreperson of the Civil Grand Jury. And it's a real pleasure to talk with you about the small subject of government performance in the next 20 minutes. I actually want to begin, though, with a recognition of the Controller's Office and Ben and his team, because over the last year, they have been tremendously responsive, helpful, and most of all, I'd say, patient with the innumerable questions, requests, annoying last-minute meeting demands, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So to Ben, representatives of his team, we very much appreciate that help and collaboration. So I want to spend the next 20 minutes talking about our work in government performance, what we found, but I need to make a confession first, okay? And that confession is that I'm not going to follow the PowerPoint presentation because I don't like PowerPoint presentations. I've seen too many of them, and I think you all probably have seen too many of them as well. So I'm going to speak more or less directly. Having said that, if you have questions about anything that was in your agenda that's in the presentation, please feel free to ask the question and we'll answer it. I want to spend the first half of the next 20 minutes talking about more or less what we did, and then I want to just leave it open for your questions and comments, should you have them. And I'm going to start my conversation with focusing on two different areas. First of all, what we did, what we looked at, what did the civil grand jury focus on for government performance for a year? What did we look at? And then secondly, talk in general terms the outline of our findings and recommendations. And the discussion begins with frustration. The people of San Francisco are frustrated. This is not my opinion. Credible opinion polls over the last several years document that a near majority of San Franciscans believe the city is headed in the wrong direction. That's remarkable when you think about it in different ways. We have the most dynamic economy in the country here. We have an employment rate that is at perhaps record levels. We have a city that's among the most beautiful in the world, and yet people are deeply frustrated. Why is that? Why is that? Well, according to credible opinion polls, number one, homelessness. Number two, affordability crisis, housing especially. Number three, street crime, petty crime, street safety. Again and again, those things appear to be the most important issues for San Franciscans. So we looked at that context and stepped back. And you all are a great group to talk to these issues about, because over the last 10 years, if you look at the metrics, in each of those areas, the situation has not meaningfully improved. In fact, by the city's own metrics, things have actually worsened in certain respects. Even while the budget of San Francisco has increased by 100%. We crunched the numbers. We looked at San Francisco's budget on a per capita basis. We believe, after crunching the numbers, that San Francisco now has perhaps the most expensive public services per capita in the country. Think about that. Well, we wanted to understand how the government is tracking progress, measuring progress, and reporting that to the people. That's the starting point for trying to understand how to fix things. And so we focused most of all on the single mechanism by which the government reports to the people on a systematic basis. And fortunately, this topic has already been introduced by the previous agenda item, the performance scorecards. It's the only systemic way that the government is reporting on its progress to the people in a consistent basis. Now, Ben's office, the Office of the Comptroller, is responsible for managing and administering that. But it's really reporting on the performance of the executive, which under the city charter is responsible for the performance, and the mayor in particular. So we looked at how this system works. We spoke to dozens of people across the government, the legislature, the executive. We spoke to folks outside government, experts. We looked at external resources, leading academic research, a lot of effort. And we also looked at other cities, what they do. Now, no city is a perfect example for any other city, let alone San Francisco. But what's going on in Portland or Seattle or New York City or Philadelphia or Austin, it matters. Those cities are struggling in different ways with the same things that San Francisco is struggling with. And several of those, including Philadelphia and New York, have joint city and county structures, like San Francisco. So they have a double whammy in terms of their responsibilities. So we looked at all of those cities as well. And when you think about it, what we did was we spent more or less a year looking at the basic operating system of the government. How is it working? Is it serving the people well. You all probably know the civil grand jury, it's 19 totally random people thrown into a room. They have nothing in common other than the fact that they live in San Francisco and they're on the civil grand jury. And we came out unanimously with a set of findings and recommendations. Unanimously. Try to get 19 people who have nothing in common to unanimously agree. It's a challenge, as Kathy, the foreperson, knows more than anyone. And the takeaways, I think, at the most general level, number one, the city can substantially, significantly improve how progress is being reported to the people. Number two, the city can substantially improve the focus on the things that matter most to the people of San Francisco and even how those things are being managed. Number three, the city can substantially improve, and this was alluded to in the previous agenda item, the way that you link together performance management and reporting with budget and planning in the government. What follows from that is 8 findings and 14 recommendations. We could have had a long list of findings. We could have had an even longer list of recommendations. What we chose to do instead was to focus on what we thought were the most important findings and the most implementable. Now, I know some of you may be thinking, as you have individually and collectively a lot of experience in the government, you must be thinking, gosh, Lawrence, all that sounds kind of nice, but things in government are complicated or expensive or both. Well, actually, we're not really talking about complicated things. That's not our focus. We're talking about basic things. Example, finding number one, which I'll read for the record. The broader public is barely aware of the performance scorecard framework, diminishing its utility and hampering the San Francisco government's ability to communicate progress to San Franciscans. So breaking that down, what that means is all of the work that Ben's team does, getting all of this amazing information from across the government, packaging it together across dozens of different indicators, is barely even noticed by the public. They barely even know what's going on. The recommendation couldn't be more basic. Stick the performance scorecards, for a starter point, on the homepage of the government. It was alluded to that, in fact, Mr. Bush, I think you said this, that the mayor's office recently put the performance scorecards on the homepage of the mayor's office. That's true. We're happy to see that too. We might even want to take a little bit of credit for that, actually. But then again, if you look where it is now, you got to scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll, and then maybe, if you're still focused, you'll find it. So we looked at basic issues, and we tried to line up some ideas that are supportive of the people in government, not destructive. We're trying to be helpful. We're a nonpartisan group. What we've effectively done is teed up on a silver platter a nonpartisan blueprint to help the government do a better job of reporting to the people. I started this little talk by asking why. Why is it that so many people are frustrated in San Francisco? And maybe it is because of homelessness issues. And maybe it is because of affordability issues or other issues. But maybe it's also because people in San Francisco have very little understanding about what's going on, what the government is progressing on or not, and why. And the irony of that statement is that it's actually in the self-interest of the elected officials of San Francisco to change that. Because the best academic research that we've seen suggests that the more an audience understands what's going on its behalf, the operational efforts that are being conducted, the more confidence, the more trust is going to be raised. So it's in the interests of the mayor's office. It's in the interests of the Board of Supervisors to take the way the city is reporting on performance and elevate it to a much greater degree. I've gone over 10 minutes. We don't have enough time to go through each one of the findings or the recommendations. Kathy and I are available now to take questions or at your convenience outside this forum. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thanks for your presentation. All right, questions from the committee?
I have a couple. When it comes to certainly oversight and review of the city's budget, as far as access to information, there is the Comprehensive Annual Fiscal Report, also known as the CAFR. And that is publicly accessible. And there is also GASB, which is a general government audit service bureau that comes out with findings and recommendations annually on municipalities' budgets and expenditures. And there are many others that don't come to mind right at the moment, but there is a lot of review, and I appreciate, Lawrence, all the work that you have put in, and that there's this sense of frustration that has been found as a result of these polls that were taken. And I don't doubt that there is a sense of frustration by people in San Francisco, but what for me is a leap in the findings, and I believe the recommendations to be well-intended and based on the findings that the grand jury arrived at, is that the frustration is somehow linked to the expenditures. There's a reference here to the overall general budget and a tie to a per capita expenditure. So when you take the city's entire annual budget, and in that entire annual budget, you have enterprise department dollars. And by that, I mean the airport, for example, would be in the $9.5 billion that is cited here. And so as a resident of San Francisco, you may or may not pay any portion of the city's, of the airport's budget. It's fee for service. DBI is a fee for service. So in the event, as a city resident, you don't utilize that service, you don't actually pay any of that. So the frustration that it is broken out as to homelessness, so that's would be a general fund supported service. Petty crime, which would be police, and that's a general fund funded service. Housing. So I wonder if there was an analysis of the general fund expenditures, which would be more directly related to the four things that they found the most frustration with. In other words, we could set aside PUC and whether or not, you know, people are happy with the water rates. Those are regulated under CPUC audits anyway and findings, the authority having jurisdiction. So it sounds like the four areas of frustration are all general fund funded budget items. And how did that measure against the other cities that were measured? Seattle, Portland, Austin, New York, Philadelphia, if we know.
Yeah, it's a very good question. Thank you, and I'll circle back to another point you made as well. The answer is it sounds like a great task for this advisory body to look at that. We didn't spend that much time focused on breaking down the budget and looking at different elements of the budget. I think that is one hypothesis that you could draw, that you should look at it, or whether it's the civil grand jury, you all, or someone else. I think you could also make the suggestion that there should be more, I would say, detailed analysis of the cost effectiveness in terms of on a per unit basis in different areas of the government, and different cities are beginning to really look at that in greater detail. How do you measure on a per unit basis in a given area of public service cost effectiveness? And I think that's another way to get at it. We didn't do that specific research for our work. As I said, our work was overall looking at the basic system of how the city is tracking performance, focusing public attention, reporting it so that the public can hold the government to account. So appreciate that. If I can, on that point, circle back to one of your first points, you noted that there are a lot of other releases or reports every year, including the big budget documentation that comes out, that does contain information. That's true. There are a lot of reports. In fact, if you lined up all of the reports, we could fill this room, right? But in some ways, that's exactly the point that we're trying to make, which is that for all of this reporting, the people don't seem to be getting it. But it's not even just that. This is the last point I make on your question, sorry, and then turning it to others. It's not even that. There are people in this building with large offices, and I can't tell you them, their names, but you could probably guess. There are people in this building with large offices who don't know what the performance scorecard is, who are unclear about how the government is reporting to the people, notwithstanding all of the amazing things, the publications, the reports that you've alluded to. How do other cities deal with this? There's no perfect example, but one way to do it is the mayor every year stands up and says, this is how we're doing. Now, you might say, well, wait a sec, that's the state of the city. No, it's not. It's a concise summation of how we're doing. Metrics are clear against goals every year. This is how we're doing.
Other questions? Robert.
Yeah, just a quick question. There's a statement on page 3 of what I'm looking at. Major roads rated the worst of any large city in the U.S. I don't want an answer today, but if you could maybe send to Ben a list of those roads by name, it would be nice to pass that on to our capital improvement group.
Yes.
So they see if they kind of line up with what they're thinking.
Yeah, I'm happy to provide that, Mr. Carlson. I know actually Ben is specifically aware of that. In fact, I can also speak on his behalf. He disagrees with the methodology of that finding. We actually partially disagree with it too. I think it's still very illustrative and helpful to see, so I'm happy to provide the details that exist on that specific finding for your consideration.
Thank you.
My comments are gonna be saved mostly for the controller's response to the grand jury report, which I have a number of points on. But as I listened to the conversation and with Commissioner Carlson's or Commissioner Hughes's points, it seems that what we're really also saying is there's a disconnect between the work that's being done by the controller's office and others and what the public understands that work to be. And you're right, there are innumerable reports, everything from Harvey Rose to the controller's office and each different department. And there is not a framework that lets you see in one place even the top 5 reports that look at the city. I remember I'm one of the older ones here, that when Ed Koch was mayor, he used to go around town saying, how we doing, how we doing? And you don't hear anybody saying that in San Francisco very often. What we did have a candidate for mayor who ran a few years ago who was a viable candidate, who actually went to the door of the mayor's office and asked for copies of the city's budget and everything that went with it, and was unable to get it, and became quite an issue for about 3 days. So I think that one of the things that we might want to review in the controller's response is ways in which there can be a better job of communicating what we do know and what we don't know. This is a familiar topic for Ben and me.
I'm sure. Well, if there are no other questions, I'll thank you Lawrence on behalf of the committee, and I'd like you to transmit our thanks to your 18 fellow members there. I hope you got some satisfaction out of the job you did, because I know you couldn't have been in it for the money.
No, that's right. Just trying to help out.
Thank you. What? Public comment. I'm sorry. Yes.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Durantler. The mission of the performance scorecard is to highlight the key performance indicators for the city of San Francisco. The key takeaway from the civil grand jury report is the lack of report visibility and the ineffectiveness of the performance scorecard. I'm going to make some comments pertaining the actual presentation of the report. Some of the individual measure targets make no sense. This is disappointing, since half of the CSA department resources are committed to performance improvement. Examples. One of the biggest problems facing the city is the $4 billion underfunded situation with the retirement plan. You are reporting March 2015 two-year-old performance numbers against a 2043 goal of 100% funding. The number that's currently reported is 0.4 percentage point. The Office of the Comptroller was instrumental in crafting the plan to fund the retiree health benefits, so I don't understand why the CSA can't report progress against interim goals. Traffic fatalities. Why is the target the 2024 goal of zero? What sense does that make when you look at 2017 actual data against a 2024 goal of zero? Sales tax collection has no goal, yet the city budgets sales tax revenue. What sense does that make? Approximately 37% of the 84 performance goals have no goal, only actual data. I mean, that's ridiculous. Thank you.
Jerry. Other comment? Yeah, let's let these guys go.
I was just wondering whether you, because Mr. Tonneson is now here,
yeah,
whether you wanted to go back to item three, the election of chair and co-chair, because that is a requirement that that happen at this
meeting. Oh, we'll do it, but I'm just saying, I think that the SFGH, well, pardon me, the DPW staff, Joe Chin,
they,
and
they
Al,
they may want to be here for the conversation about the controller's response.
What? I'm sorry, about what?
We have a response to the civil grand jury report, uh-huh, that we're going to take up next, and I was thinking that the civil grand jurors might want to be here for that.
So we've provided, the committee had requested a presentation from the civil grand jury on this report. We've provided our preliminary draft responses to the report in the packet, and we would be happy to speak to those if helpful. And I agree, if the committee is interested in kind of engaging with us on our responses, it would be a good thing to have the civil grand jury here for the conversation. But that's really preference for the committee.
Well, I think we should wait until we've heard from all the staffers, like people from DPW, before we get into the elections, since we want to get them out of here. I know they got some real work to do. And all right, do we, as a committee, do we want to hear from controller? We do. Okay.
I think this can be really, really brief.
We want it to be long.
Yes.
I want to be here all day. Go ahead.
So there's a requirement that we respond in writing to the civil grand jury report, both to the findings and the recommendations. The table that was in your packet is our preliminary draft on that. And we'd welcome your comments on it. We don't have to have them from you. We can complete it without you, so that's fine. I guess the good news is there are several things in it that are quite straightforward, that were improvements we're making. Happy to do that. The civil grand jury called out the public interest in, for example, housing affordability, equity, geospatial analysis. All of those things are things that we can do and will do to improve our performance reporting. So there's quite a few things where we agree and are acting or happy to act on it. There's a number of other things where there's reasonable people can disagree about the architecture of these programs, and in some cases we do disagree. You know, I'll only mention, you know, one of them, and that is our role as a primary caretaker of this data. Certainly the mayor's office, you know, should be a leader and is a leader. We've had different roles taken by different mayor's offices. Our plan is that we remain a stable and continuous source of standard performance reporting. We think that's called for by the charter, and it makes sense politically. The controller's office tries to do non-passionate, dispassionate, non-political financial and reporting advice, and this is part of the role we play there. So there's a disagreement in the sort of architectural finding there. It's an example. The other things that really have to do with reaching the public, I really appreciate the commentary of the civil grand jury. Media space is really crowded these days. How many of you subscribe to our Twitter feed? Okay. So. SF performance scorecards. We're out there in as many modern media ways as we can think of, trying to push this data into more hands. And we update our website regularly. We are engaged in a project in the controller's office right now to look at our audiences and how we reach them and trying to reach more people. You know, I certainly take their critiques to heart, and we are actively working on them. A lot of it has to do with crowded media space. We've made decisions on design that I think are good ones. The 80 performance measures, you know, we've had critiques ranging from way too many to way too few. I don't know that the 89 we have right now is the sweet spot, but the design of the scorecards is intended to be include-exclude. You know, look at the things you're interested in, not the things you don't. We think it's probably about the right level of expertise and reach right now, but I certainly appreciate the feedback that they've provided here. Again, if you have any other comments on our response, be happy to take them, but you have our draft.
Questions from the committee?
I have a few comments on F2 response about the mayor's role. I was just going to suggest that the scorecard and other information could be incorporated as an appendix to the mayor's State of the City address. As the author of 4 State of the City addresses for the past mayors, I know that that is not the vehicle for issuing the scorecard itself, but it's a handy option because a lot of people do look at it to include that as an appendix to the mayor's remarks. So I was going to suggest that your response take that into account. F4 and 5, you suggest on performance indicators, I would say that those areas without goals in particular could indicate and highlight those areas where San Francisco is not at the top tier compared to other cities and where it needs to have added focus. Because right now it's a little hard to gather where we're falling short in comparison to other cities. F8 has to do with the need for greater diversity in the voices that are city policy. And I was going to suggest that wouldn't this include the charter mandate of inclusivity on commission appointments? For example, one of the requirements is that there be a disabled person appointed to a number of commissions. But as it happens now, among those who report that they are disabled, among all the city commissioners, there's only one person who says that they're disabled. This was a problem in the past about the lack of diversity in the neighborhoods of the city, so that about 50% of all commission appointments came from District 2, which is no surprise. That's where people have a lot of money and a lot of time. But it meant that in the western side of the city, there were no commissioners at all in the Sunset or in the Richmond, absolutely none. So you had no training ground for people to grow into a new job. R2.1 is a recommendation about how the how the mayor could release the information, and the controller's office correctly notes that that's a recommendation that should be taken to the mayor, but there would be no reason not to suggest from the controller's office that this is when it's coming out and you might want an opportunity to have a press event and go ahead and move forward on that. R7.1 is about housing, and I would recommend that in addition to the issues that are listed there, that it include housing quality. If you take a look at DBI, for example, on their performance measures, they do a measurement on housing quality standards as a hazardous for the residents, and those are not hazardous, and different things. I think that that should include those things. In a general way, I think that there could be a greater distribution of the reports at meetings that the supervisors hold in their own district, other community meetings, and I don't know if you have a expansive mailing list of all the community organizations in the city, but somebody has it because I get them all the time. And you could put an alert about all of this on every GOBOC meeting agenda. And then I would just say that there could be more briefings on this. When SFGOVTV provides time for people to do public service type announcements, and there could be a public service type announcement that looks at these issues and even fields questions. So that's my background as a public affairs person who labored mightily hard to get the public to understand what a great job my boss was doing, and it wasn't always coming through.
Yeah. I have a comment. I think that
Kristen?
That bringing up the comment of being a public affairs person is very important. A lot of these recommendations, and thank you for all of your work, it's clear that you guys spent a lot of time and effort on this and expertise. A lot of the recommendations are suggesting a way of marketing the information, a way of communicating that information. I am not an expert on that, and I think that we should look to the experts for things. But I see an opportunity in our upcoming survey that we're going to put together that talks about how people feel about the bond, you know, whether the bond, you know, the bond, some of the bonds have delivered what the voters expected. Perhaps we can expand that a little bit to talk about what is the best way to communicate with the voters, instead of, you know, sort of making some assumptions that you know, the examples that you gave about SFGH and all that, or TV.
TOV-TV.
Yeah. It might be an opportunity to get some more information and then use the right mechanisms to communicate not just this information but the bond information.
Just to briefly note as well that we certainly appreciate the attention from the civil grand jury on this important topic and share the same belief that they do and that you're discussing here, that we have certain products that are only as effective as they are consumed by the public because they're public-facing reporting. For a little bit of kind of larger context about the performance scorecards we're talking about here, which we are very proud of, but do understand that they're a work in progress, and which is part of why we're in agreement with 7 of the 10 recommendations the civil grand jury is making here. The government measures so many different things and reports them in so many different ways that at times our perception is that that can make it impossible for the public to comprehend and view into the government to see what's and truly kind of understand what's going on at a broad level. This was an observation that we've made for years about our own performance measure reporting, where we track over 1,000 different performance measures for city departments in a central system, and for many years had reported that in kind of flat format out to the public. But how you comprehend that in terms of a public audience is difficult. We replaced that partially in response to a suggestion from a prior civil grand jury, actually, with what we called the performance barometer about 5 years ago, which created a very simple kind of flat format, almost a PDF of 40 different measures that we thought would be of general public interest. And then this is the latest iteration of that effort. We've now gone from summarizing in kind of a flat once-a-year PDF format of 40 to 50 key measures into something approaching 80, but in a much more dynamic format where you can drill into a measure and see history, and the page behind it often will take you to related links should you be interested in. Allows you to amend date ranges and kind of view the parameters you're looking at, and is updated much more frequently. So rather than an annual report, in many cases here we're updating this with 911 call data, answering data from last month, for example. So it's just much more flexible. So this is our latest experiment in this space. We agree that more effort and to push this out into the kind of public realm is a key part of our work plan. We have a marketing committee within the controller's office that's looking at kind of how do we better promote these. I've talked about some of these efforts with Mr. Bush. The consumption of the public of the performance scorecards, though, is several fold higher than the benchmarking reports that it replaced in terms of web traffic, Twitter traffic, and those sorts of things. So we need to get to multiples again, but we do think that it's a significant improvement, not just in terms of kind of the sophistication with which we're presenting information, but the ability of the public to consume it. So just a note of thanks to the civil grand jury for their work here. And again, look forward to further engagement with this committee on this.
Just to further on that point, one of the things that you've done this year that didn't happen before is that you have a breakdown by supervisor's district. And I haven't seen anything that came out and says, hey, folks, take a look. You can look at your own supervisor's district and see what's going on. And sending that to community groups in that district or to the supervisor would doubtlessly result in more people taking a look at it. The other point I would make is that when I worked at Housing and Urban Development and they moved to performance measurements, which was about 100 years later than it should have been, they did a red, yellow, green tag on each performance, whether it was meeting its objective, whether it was falling short, or whether it was a disaster. I mean, they didn't say disaster, of course. And it seems to me that one of the things that could help on this for the public to look at is, well, which are the ones that are in a red zone? Which ones are in the green zone? Where are we with the different performance measures? It's a little hard to scope that out on your own the way it's presented now.
And that's really one of the things we've added with this iteration of the scorecards is on the front page of the scorecard site for those 80 measures, we do provide yellow, red, green bands for performance for those measures where a goal has been established. And there are measures here where a goal has not been established for reasons of it's new, or in some cases, what we're displaying here is something where a goal may not make sense. But those are rarities, I think. So that is one of the kind of ease sure of public red, consumption we're looking to.
Make sure the red and green are really distinct for those of us who are colorblind.
So we will certainly do that.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Can't tell red and green.
Mr. Chair, if I might be recognized for one moment. So if I understand this correctly, the next step in the process here is that this civil grand jury's report, and thank you very much, it's obviously a lot of work and greatly appreciated, will go to both the mayor's office and the Board of Supervisors. It will either go with or without recommendation from this committee, and I would like to move that we send this to forward with recommendations as outlined in the staff report.
And I would like amended to include some of the recommendations I made.
Just procedurally, in terms of where we're at in the process, if it helps for the conversation. So the civil grand jury has formally submitted their reports. It goes to a number of different respondents. This one comes to us, controller's office for response, mayor and board of supervisors. Each one has we have 60 days. I believe the board of supervisors has 90 days to finalize their response, as does the mayor. So we'll finalize our response and transmit it at the end of our very early August. There will then be a hearing of the report at the Government Audit and Oversight Committee of the Board of Supervisors in August, where they'll finalize their recommendations and file them. In the case of this report, GOBOC is not a named respondent, so you're not required to respond as a body. in your advisory input role vis-a-vis the controller's office. If you have comments you'd like us to consider as we're finalizing our report, we certainly would be open to it. But you're not required to do so. So it really is the committee's discretion whether you'd like to give us official things for our consideration in finalizing our report.
And, Mr. Chair, with that information and realizing that report is yet to be finalized, I withdraw the motion.
Okay, fair enough. All right, any other comments on that? Then.
I just want to make a couple of very quick responses for the record. I want to say that we're not suggesting at all to take any control over the performance scorecards away from the controller's office. We think it's critical that the controller's office maintains its role, and in fact, if anything, strengthens its role as an independent manager and administrator of the overall platform of the performance scorecard. So wanted to make that clear for the record. The other point I wanted to say for the record is agreeing with a comment made earlier that in terms of the media space, it is crowded. There is one person in the government who's guaranteed media time, I think at least, the mayor. Okay. And noting that comment from Mr. Bush, whether it's the state of the city, whether it's other venues, since the mayor is accountable for the performance, and the mayor is the one who's going to get the most press attention, to us it's not so much about what the controller's office decides, it's about what the mayor's office decides, how they use that information, how that information is presented to the public, because the mayor is accountable. Just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Then further public comment on what we just heard. I don't know that we have to do more, but if we do, this is the chance for it. Hearing none. Yeah, the health plan.
Yeah. Item 7, discussion from.
Want to go back to
Mr. Chairman, did you want to return to item number 3 at this time or proceed with item 7?
I think we should proceed with item 7 as we have the staffers who've been sitting here for coming up on 2 hours now waiting to make their presentation.
Item 7, presentation from Public Works regarding the 2016 health bond and possible action by the committee in response to such presentation.
Good morning, Chairman Larkin, committee members. My name is Edgar Lopez. I'm Deputy Director of Public Works and City Architect. Before you hear from our staff on the first update of the 2016 public health and safety bond, I wanted to take a minute to introduce Joe Chin, who's the program manager who's going to be leading the implementation of the bond. I know that some of you have met Joe in the past, but wanted to give you a quick introduction and background. Joe is a civil engineer who's licensed in California. He's been with the department for over 20 years. He spent nearly half of his career implementing the design and construction of the Zuckerberg General Hospital, where he's done outstanding work. So he's very familiar with how to advance OSHPD projects. He has deep expertise in public health, and he's also supported by other project managers and analysts who have expertise in matters related to the other parts of the bond related to fire and Department of Homelessness. So I want to welcome Joe, and I want you also know that he's supported by our organization at all levels. So thank you.
Thanks for waiting, Joe.
Good morning, Chairman Larkin and members of the Siegelbach Committee. As Edgar mentioned, Joe Chin, Public Works Program Manager. I'm honored today to be here to kick off the next bond program, the 2016 Public Health and Safety Bond Program. Before I start with the presentation, I just want to, indulge me for less than a minute. I want to just acknowledge the client department that are here and also my project management staff that are here to in support of the bond program. I know I have Chief Rivera and Chief Zanoff from the San Francisco Fire Department, Ms. G. Whitney and Sam Dodge of the Department of Homelessness Support Housing, well as Mr. Mark Primo of Department of Public Health, were not able to attend today, but they do send their regards. And I also wanted to, since this is going to be the first time presenting in front of CGOBOC, I wanted to introduce my project management team. They include Samuel Chu and Kathleen O'Day, project managers on the ambulance deployment facility project, Gabriella Sorelli, who you know very well from the ESER project, on the neighborhood fire station projects, Paul DeFreitas, project manager from the homeless service sites project. We're also supported by Diane Alberto and Jamin Barnes, who are the analysts on the program. So I thank them for joining me today in today's presentation. Without further ado, let's go ahead with the first slide. The first slide is meant to just to show a quick overview of the bond program. The entire bond authorization amount is $350 million, which is allocated to three departments. For the Department of Public Health, we have $272 million spread across three components. They include the Zuckerberg San Francisco General Building 5 projects with amount allocated of $222 million. And also for the Southeast Health Center renovation and expansion, we have $30 million allocated as the bond authorization, and the Community Health Center component, $20 million. For the fire department, we have $58 million that's allocated from the bond program, split between two components. We have the ambulance deployment facility, which is $43.5 million, with $14.5 million allocated to the neighborhood fire station projects. And then the last component is the homeless service sites, and the allocation in the bond program is $20 million. And the and also to talk about the so one of the first tasks that the team has able to complete is the first bond sale that was completed in March of 2017 in the amount of $176 million, and the allocation of the first bond sale is shown on the table. I won't go through that in detail. Okay. The next slide is the executive summary. Let me just spend a few minutes to talk about the highlights. Some of the specific highlights will be discussed in the subsequent slides, so I won't go into detail on those. But under section one, under highlights and accomplishments, I do want to point out that our team, one of the first tasks our team has been working on is the selection of a what we call construction management support service consultant team. That is a team that we intend to partner, that we want to partner with Public Works to implement the proper cost schedule and project controls to ensure the successful delivery of the project. And under section two, upcoming milestones, just want to point out that currently we are targeting only two bond sales for this bond program, and the schedule currently shows that to be somewhere in July of 2018 in the amount of $178 million. And under section three, bond sales and appropriation, I mentioned earlier the first bond sale amount was $176 million, of which one of the first tasks we did after the bond sale was to complete the reimbursement for pre-bond funding. So we're able to complete that in April of 2017 very successfully. And we were able to, and on the Department of Public Health side, it was reimbursed for $7.1 million and $754,740 for the San Francisco Fire Department. Okay. And moving on to the next slide, this is the because the next series of slides is meant to give a more detailed description of each of the bond component. So the first slide is on the Zuckerberg San Francisco General Building 5 component. So let me see. So the Zuckerberg component is focused on delivering projects in the existing hospital Building 5, which includes bringing the building up to current seismic standards, improvements to existing fire, life, and safety systems, improvements to accommodate and consolidate clinical and outpatient services from other buildings on campus and remote sites, and also to implement improvements to meet accessibility requirements. Just to kind of go through it, just kind of set the ground on the bar chart that's on the near the top of the slide. That's meant to show the first bond sale versus the second bond sale. What's in green is the remaining balance that has not been spent or encumbered from the first bond sale. And then the colors in blue and kind of the salmon or pink shows the encumbrances and or expenditures to date for this component. So just based on this slide, approximately $8 million has been encumbered or spent to date. So with the pre-bond funding for this component, the team has been able to hit the ground running and be able to greenlight 7 of the 19 core projects. So the 7 projects that have been that are currently in various phases of either design, construction, are the seismic retrofit of Building 5, physical therapy department relocation, dialysis relocation, public health lab relocation, 6H surge space, information technology or IT infrastructure project, and the urgent care clinic relocation. So the seismic retrofit, we call PT lab, a PT relocation, 6H surge space projects are nearing design completion and we'll be moving into bidding phase in the next months with construction starting by the end of the year. Urgent care clinic relocation is currently the only project that's in construction right now for this component. And all other projects are currently in the design phase. And as we kind of finish the design of what we call priority one or phase one projects, the team has been working in conjunction with Department of Public Health to prioritize the next series of core projects, and we'll be initiating the planning and scoping phase shortly. And some of the priority two projects includes psychiatric emergency service expansion, specialty services relocation, and various fire alarm and mechanical improvement projects. Okay. And moving on to the Southeast Health Center component. This component focuses on the renovation of the existing facility and the construction of a new addition that expands and fully integrates a family-oriented primary care model with comprehensive behavior health services. And from this slide, it shows that about almost $2 million has been expended or encumbered to date. In terms of where we are in the project, renovation of the existing facility is currently in construction and is targeted to be completed by the end of July 2017, with a move-in date of September of 2017 as well. The new addition has recently finished the planning and scoping phase and will start construction will be in design for the next year, with construction starting around the second quarter of 2019. Okay. The next component is the community health centers. This component focuses on the renovation of existing health centers, to allow for the integration of primary care and mental health services by adding additional counseling exam rooms and upgrading lab and nurse stations. The new health center configuration will allow for the co-location and fully integrate primary care, urgent medical and mental health care, behavior health, substance abuse services, dental and social needs services. The three priority health centers that have been identified to date include Castro Mission, Maxine Hall, and Chinatown Public Health Center. Approximately $1 million has been expended or encumbered to date for this component. Castro Mission and Maxine Hall Health Center are currently in design with construction anticipated in the second quarter of 2018. This bond component also includes collaborating and leveraging PUC funding on some various energy efficiency projects at different health centers. The funding strategy will be a 50-50 split between PUC and the bond program. One of the challenges that the team has encountered for the health center component is the low seismic performance that was discovered after a seismic assessment of the structure was performed during design. Maxine Hall was assigned a seismic hazard rating, or SHR rating, of 4, which means the structure is susceptible to partial or total collapse in the event of a major earthquake. Cashel Mission was also assigned a SHR rating of 3+. A little bit better, but still means the structure is susceptible to major or partial collapse in the event of an earthquake. So given the seismic performance of the structures, working with Department of Public Health, we decided to kind of add the seismic retrofit scope to both health center. It really doesn't make sense to do the renovation and not do the seismic at the same time, because it'll be impacting the same staffing, same clientele. It's going to cost more. So we decided to move forward with the seismic. What that means is some of the funding from the Chinatown Public Health Center, which was one of the other priority health centers, may be deferred to some of the scope may be deferred to and added to a portfolio of projects in the anticipated 2022 bond measure. And also given the experience of what we learned from Cashel Mission and Maxine Hall, the team has also engaged a structural engineer to start the seismic assessment of Chinatown to make sure we understand the condition of the structure and to make sure we know the full scope at this time. Okay. Moving on to the slide 7, which is the ambulance deployment facility. This component is to replace the existing facility at 2245 Gerald Avenue with a new facility at 1450 Evans Avenue to enhance the efficiency of emergency medical services and improve ambulance response times. The new facility will include an emergency services facility, ambulance and staff parking, and related site improvements. Over $3 million has been expended and encumbered to date. The project is currently in design with a target bid date of April of 2018 and a construction start date of August of 2018 as well. Slide 8, which is the neighborhood fire station component. This component will rehabilitate and upgrade fire stations to provide an improved safety and healthy work environment for firefighters. Funding from this bond program will remove the 6 remaining host towers at fire station 6, 11, 12, 15, 21, and 38. Approximately $200,000 has been expended or encumbered to date. The host tower projects are currently in design with the construction target date of 2019. And slide number 9 is for the homeless service site component. This component will fund capital improvements such as addressing deferred maintenance items and tenant improvement renovations to city-owned shelters serving homeless families and individuals to increase capacity and resilience. 3 city-owned facilities or shelters have been identified to date, which include 1001 Polk, 525 Fifth Street, and 260 Golden Gate Avenue. 440 Turk Street was also recently identified as a potential site to be converted into a homeless service resource center. The scope will include purchasing, rehabilitation, and renovation of the facility. Approximately $106,000 has been expended or encumbered to date. All projects are currently in the planning and scoping phase. And then slide number 10, this is a budget and expenditure summary table. Just to kind of quickly go through some of the numbers. The first bond sale budget is $176 million with appropriations of $129,395,172. Total expenditures of $11,293,536. Encumbrances of $4,500,000. $558,625, and the remaining balance of $113,543,011. And that concludes my presentation. I'm here, and the rest of my team are here to address any other questions or comments from the CGOA committee. Thank you.
All right, Joe. Questions from the committee?
So we had a liaison meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Predicted.
Please.
three of us were out there, and I had a miscommunication, so we couldn't be four. Thanks to Mr. Drattler for some help thinking about some of the challenges around this bond. And thank you, Joe, for you guys for meeting with me, or meeting with us. I think that we, as a governance organization, we're going to struggle with this bond. One of the reasons, if you look at it from the perspective of we care about whether the project is on time, on budget, and meeting voter expectations. There's a lot of uncertainty in this bond. It's sort of built into that, and I think that it's uncertainty around scope that DPW actually doesn't have any control over. That the business owners, the ones that they are trying to meet the needs of, really controls what the scope of this bond is. I mean, even in your last slide, you said three places had been identified. Another one is being considered. So it's a moving scope. So how do we govern against that? I think it is very much important to understand the effect of the business owners on the ability for DPW to meet these needs. I was on this committee when the Laguna Honda Hospital project was happening, and I know there was a number of challenges with that project. But certainly the changing scope of that project also, I think, had a significant effect on what happened with that bond. I don't have an answer for this problem. I think that as liaisons are going to liaison meetings, that we need to work together. I mean, Robert definitely brought up a number of issues or areas that we want to keep an eye on from the very beginning. But I think it's something that we should be aware of from the very beginning.
Did you want to add anything to that, Robert?
No, I had a question on page 4 of the Zuckerberg page. Just quick. 6H surge space. That's the one. What's a surge space?
Okay. Let me explain that. So 6H surge space refers to Ward 6, which is building 5, 6th floor. We're going to have a lot of these so-called surge space projects because building 5 is going to remain functional, operational during all the construction. So in order for us, the project to do the work or deliver the project, the capital improvements, clinical staff, doctors will need to be relocated to temporary spaces to allow the work to occur. So
surge means temporary.
Correct. So surge is meant for to either account for temporary use during construction, and or some of these spaces may actually be permanent as well.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. I got that now.
Okay.
And then just in the pie charts where we have the construction budget of 166.5 and on all the other construction, is that just the budget for the construction contract, or does that include the soft costs during construction?
The construction, the part of the pie chart that's in red that shows the construction is really just the hard construction dollars, direct construction
so
cost.
All soft costs during design, everything is in project controls.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
That was going to be my question because it looked like what you had for soft costs was going to be on the order of 30% across the board here. So that includes design, which I'll put at, say, 10, though I guess that they could be higher with this because you've got a lot of renovation work going on. But this is for budgetary purposes. This number is based on experience then?
Correct. So to answer your first question, yes. The project control metrics we're currently using, and depending on which component, some of the smaller components with smaller projects tend to have a little bit higher in percentages for project control. So they may be upwards of about maybe 40%, and those are in line with industry standards, just based on it has to, like you're saying, Chairman Larkin, includes design, construction management, inspection, and especially on the Zuckerberg piece, some of those projects also includes additional oversight from the what we call inspectors of record, and those are specialty inspectors that are required by OSHPA, which is the state agency over acute care facilities. So that adds another layer of inspection or QAQC over the contractor's work.
And that external, we'll call it external inspection, and that comes, is included in this project control budget then?
That's correct.
Okay. Other questions from the committee members?
I have two quick questions. On the neighborhood fire stations, this is for seismic hose tower removal. So seismic hose towers, they're non-compliant with seismic regulations currently, which is what necessitates their removal, correct? These hose towers do not meet seismic standards.
Let me defer the question to Gabriella, and she can probably give you a more technical response.
Okay. And that is what necessitates the removal, correct?
That's correct. The existence of the hose towers poses a significant seismic risk, and their removal significantly improves the seismic performance of the building.
I understand. And excuse me. And what goes in their place? So how do you dry the hoses?
Well, the San Francisco Fire Department has changed their technology over time, and now they use a material which does not need to be stretched too dry in order to prevent mold, et cetera, keep them serviceable. They do just get reeled back up on the proper equipment, and they can dry there using modern materials. So the hose towers are no longer functionally required for San Francisco Fire Department.
Thank you. And last question is 440 Turk. 440 Turk was a former Housing Authority property, correct?
Yes.
And
Paul DeFreitas will be here to respond to that question.
Or is currently a Housing Authority property?
That is correct. 440 Turk is currently being studied as a possible purchase. The Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing is looking at purchasing the facility, renovating it into a 24-hour homeless resource center. That's currently still being negotiated and studied by the Real Estate Department.
And is that structure currently is unoccupied?
That is correct. There is a portion of the building adjacent which remains as housing. The portion of the building where the Housing Authority was is currently vacant.
Thank you.
Robert?
Just one other, Joe, on the other community health centers, you mentioned about the seismic work that's now been discovered on Maxine Hall and possibly Castro, potentially or for sure impacting Chinatown. The $500,000 that was spent pre-bond didn't look at the seismic or what happened there?
I believe during the some of the pre-bond dollar that was spent was actually in the process of starting the seismic assessment of the facility, but unfortunately the bond was sized much earlier than prior to than the discovering of the seismic performance deficiencies in both health center. So therefore, unfortunately, the timing was not there. Otherwise, the amount that would have been requested for approval by the voter, it would have been a lot more than essentially $5 million apiece for total project costs for each of the health center.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? All right. Public comment. And we have some.
From one of the usual suspects. Good morning. My name is Jerry Drantler. I have three comments. The $7 million of pre-bond cost, did the Department of Public Health and its commission, the business owners, sign off on this expenditure? DPW is the project construction manager and not the project sponsor. Number two, should the sign-off of all pre-bond expenditures by the project sponsors be the standard procedure going forward for all general obligation bond projects. Number three, how does the $7 million pre-bond expenditure compare to the amount that was budgeted for pre-bond expenditures? Thank you.
Other public comment? Hearing none, can we, is this the time to go back to the election then? Three.
Item three, election of chair and vice chair.
Okay. I sent some emails out. I don't know if it were to all the members of the committee, but I am not going to seek a third term as chair. The vice chair, the current vice chair, is Brenda, and she would be a candidate for chair to replace me. And I think, what would the procedure be? Someone, if there are to be other nominees, this would be the time to name them.
Excuse me, Ken Rude, Deputy City Attorney, through the chair. I think what we've done in the past is we will have first a discussion of the chair, motions, depending on who's nominated to be chair, public comment on the motion and action, and then we'll repeat that for the vice chair. So I think the first order of business here is to have a discussion about who is interested in being chair and then take it from there.
Okay. Who is interested in being chair? Don't all raise your hands at once. Well, Brenda, you are interested, are you not?
I think when we discuss this procedure or this possible action, Brian has shared with me that he did not wish to seek a third term as chair. And as of I were interested, and I told him I felt that that since I have assisted him as vice chair for two terms, that I would be willing and open to continuing to play a leadership position on this committee.
Well, with that in mind, I'll nominate you. Do we have a second for Brenda?
Second.
Kristen, thank you. Any other nominees? Nominations, pardon me.
No.
Well, Kevin, I'm looking in your direction, but
yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I thought we were going to call the roll.
He's ready.
All right. If there are no other nominees, we have to have public comment on this. Jerry, you got something to say? Hearing nothing from Jerry, all in favor of Brenda for the next chair of the committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yeah, okay. Any opposed? Brenda, you're walking away with it. A rout. You got more votes than President Trump did for percentages. Think of that. Okay. For vice chair, anyone who has an interest in it, this isn't a way of discussion. I mean, I'm looking to see if anyone's interested before I start nominating people. So, or if someone else wants to speak on behalf of another member of the committee who they think would be a good candidate. No? All right. Well,
I'd like to make a comment. I think that Kristen Chu would be a good candidate, even though she has been approved only early this year. I think that Kristen's past experience serving this committee several years ago, that has allowed her to really pick up her activity on day one. It is my opinion that she would make a very good vice chair. She's meticulous, she's analytical, and she asks very reasonable questions, which I think is an asset to add to this committee in a leadership position.
I'll nominate you, Kristen, if you want, if you'd like the position, if you would accept the position.
So I have said this before, I'd be reluctant to do it just because of the time commitment and just personal other commitments.
Oh.
However, if nobody else wants it.
That's what you're looking at.
Yeah, so.
All right, well, I nominate Kristen.
I'd like to speak in favor of Kristen. Since I've sat in meetings with her, she does ask very good questions. In fact, I nearly resigned from the commission in response.
Okay.
But I think that she would be an asset in any position with us.
All right. Well, Kristen, I'll nominate you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Got to be quicker. Okay. All right, public comment. Jerry, sure. Speak now, forever hold your peace. All right. All in favor of Kristen being vice chair?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Once again, it's unanimous.
Yes, thank you both.
Yeah, really.
So congratulations to both. Just a point of order. I know the meeting is scheduled to end at noon. We can stay as late as 12:30 if that works with your schedules, and we still have a quorum.
Okay. Well, we just, I think at this point it's just other business that we have to conduct. And one thing that, well, and I'm going to hand it over to Brenda.
So item 8, opportunity for committee members to comment or take action on any matters within the committee's jurisdiction. Item A, the GOBOC liaison assignments or committee assignments to the various bonds.
Brenda?
I think we've been circulated the current assignments, and I've been told by Maura that there had been no objections. So if there are objections to the current assignments, please speak up. Okay, so the assignments will remain as currently circulated.
Item B, the GOBOC annual report for fiscal year 2016-2017.
I think we discussed this in our last special meeting. Included in our packets is a copy of the GOBOC report to the mayor, dated November 2016. So this is last year's report. So I believe we've been given this as an example of what our current year's report should look like. And if you can tell, we have included a liaison report. For example, San Francisco General Hospital Rebuild Program, Brian Larkin. So I believe what we should do is the following. For those of us who were assigned to a particular bond or a program in this last fiscal year 2016-17, you should each write a report similar in length to the one that was given last year. And if there are two liaisons, as in the past, you could work with the other party to consolidate your report or give separate reports as you wish. Example, 2015 Affordable Housing Bond, Jennifer Warburg and Larry Bush. So since Jennifer Warburg has resigned, so, you know, Larry Bush would be the one to...
I'm willing to go to Berlin to meet with her.
So go.
Please do. Get her input.
I know.
So, that, you know, that wasn't a good example. If Jennifer was still here, then the two of them would liaise with each other whether they want to have separate reports or a consolidated report. So... So based on that, perhaps Moria could give us an idea of the timeline that the controller's office would need a draft by.
So it would be very helpful if we could have your drafts by the end of August.
Okay.
In the September meeting, we would bring that draft back to you. There will also be a presentation from CSA that will be included on the actual bonds themselves, so those will be consolidated. So by the end of August, please.
Good, and you're going to send reminders to us.
Gentle.
A gentle reminder, probably more than one. I guess for the new members of this group, perhaps Peg can walk us through the timing, because what Moro said, that we will have the draft, which will be brought up in our GOBOC September meeting. At that meeting, hopefully we will, as a committee, will finalize that report. and that will be sent to the mayor. And as an appendix or an addendum, we will attach the CSA report as we did last year. So can you talk a little bit about, remind me again, the CSA attachment?
Sure. The CSA attachment is a summary report on all of the bonds that are under your purview. It speaks to scope, schedule, and budget. They're simple charts, and it was partly designed to report on these matters for our office purposes and also has tweaks to accommodate your purposes. So we like the report format. It's almost done right now. We were preparing it for this meeting, so there'll be no problem having it in a complete and issuable format by your September meeting. So just thinking out loud, if you're at a mostly final draft and can get your own report done at that meeting, our report will be ready to include at that time. And the sooner it's near the end of the fiscal year, just closed, the better.
So that attachment should be in our meeting materials prior to our September meeting.
Is there any chance to get a copy before our reports are due at the end of August?
Sure. Yep. We can circulate the draft for you. I think we can do it now. I'll check. But
first week of yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Great. Yeah.
I think the only other item is other matters. I have no other matters to bring up. Any members?
Yeah. I just again. Because I sometimes get some confusion from the departments I work with, but quarterly reports. We have 9 or 10 bond issues right now that we're looking at. Can we expect a quarterly report on each of those for the quarter ending June 30th?
Yes. I have communicated to all of the respective departments that a quarterly report is expected for the September packet. If we have them before the September packet, do you want them in advance?
Not necessarily. No. I don't. I mean,
we should have all of them.
Okay, great.
I have one question, if I might, Madam Chair. There is a pre-bond reimbursement procedure as the last item in our packet. And it is from DPW, and it establishes, it has statements related to the purpose, the policy, discussion, and procedure. And it states the current authorization by which pre-bond reimbursement is reimbursed. And I don't know, is this suggesting a change? Is this submittal?
Mr. Hughes, I can address that.
Sure.
I think it was included for information only, and perhaps either Kristen, maybe Robert Carlson should explain. He was the one that requested some clarification of this procedure at the meeting with Joe Chin.
Right. We had noted that pre-bond under two audits, previous audits, there was some questions in the audits about the documentation, though no question on the legitimacy of the costs. And in response to that, the department had said they were going to develop a policy and procedure. So they shared with us now the new Department of Public Works policy. So it's really for information only.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other business, I think we should adjourn this meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Wait, we have
more public comment.
Public comment.
But we did that at the beginning now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, on this, the last item. Never mind.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Drantler. One of the documents on the website for this meeting is the pre-bond reimbursement procedure. My comments regarding this proposed procedure are the same comments that I made regarding the San Francisco 2016 public health bond. DPW is the contract or the construction manager and not the project sponsor. Why does the proposed pre-bond reimbursement procedure not include a review and sign off of pre-bond expenditures by the department and commission who are the project sponsor? This is one of the recommendations that came from the Cummings audit that was you referred to. And two, why is there not a financial report prepared for pre-bond expenditures were the actual pre-bond expenditure versus the budgeted pre-bond expenditures are reported and signed off by the sponsoring department and commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other public comment, let's adjourn the meeting again.
Thank you. That's how we mean it.